Well, I was trying to think of what to talk about this week, and I've had a lot of things on my mind of late, of things I've been working on. Very recently, I've been working on an article about this new Islamic caliphate that's been declared, and you might follow the news on that. This was the very first day of Ramadan this year on the Muslim holy month. This new caliphate was declared over in Iraq and Syria by this group, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS. But they've changed it now just to the Islamic State because they claim to be the representatives of the entire world, Islam. Well, that's contested, but it's a very important development, I believe. I think it's something to be watching. And again, I've written on that. And I was thinking I might speak on that, but then the other thing that was on my mind was what I had written just before for the previous issue that didn't get published because it was too long what I had written, as surprise. What I wrote on, and although it will be published, it just, there wasn't room right then. Well, this was on, I was asked to write an article, by Scott Ashley on the war on God. And mainly in America, but of course it's all around the world, the war on God that's going on. And that the war against God, I guess, is actually the title. And I do want to speak about that today, the war against God. And the thing is about that is that I had written, it was supposed to be shorter, but there's just so much on that, if you can imagine. That's a huge topic. And so I ended up writing a fair amount and some pretty large sidebars that went along with that. And I asked Scott if he wanted me to cut it down. He said, no, I don't want it cut down. I want to keep it all, but we can't fit it in this issue. And then he said, well, our next issue is about the holy days. And then, beyond that, the one after that would be November, December. We'll probably try to, create a theme around some of that. And so we'll put it there. I don't know if it'll turn out that way. Something else may come up. The world is constantly in flux. We have to be very tentative in our plans for the issues, but that's what we talked about at this point. So we'll see if that happens. But another big reason I thought about this is because we just celebrated the birth of our country on July the 4th. Actually, that was the very reason I was writing the article. That was going to be for July, August. So it was going to focus on Independence Day and the birth of America. As well, it was going to tie into the fact that this was the 100th anniversary of World War I and the world that sort of come out of that and the world that America has changed into over that time. Well, this week was also the 17th of Tammuz, which is in the fast of the fourth month. Actually, originally it was on the 9th of Tammuz. That was the time that the Babylonians had breached the walls of Jerusalem. But then they changed it to the 17th of Tammuz because that's the day that the Romans breached the walls of Jerusalem in the New Testament, or New Testament period. And it starts among the Jews the sober 3 weeks up until Tishbe Av, the ninth of Av, marking the Babylonian and the Roman destructions of the temple. And that remembrance comes this year on August 4th in the evening and the day of August 5th. So again, between the American Independence Day and the memorial of Jerusalem's ancient destruction, the country's defiance of God seems a fitting focus today, as sad as that is. Well, getting into it, there's been really bad news on the culture front recently. It was reported on May 21st, and I must apologize because I'm going to probably give you a number of, I have to quote a number of sources as I give some quotes here because if this is going to go online, we have to have these things properly cited. So my apologies for throwing in these as you see, but that's our policy at present. But anyway, it was reported on May 21st, 2014 that some 55% of Americans now say that they support same-sex marriage, according to a new Gallup poll. That is the highest number since Gallup began polling on this issue in 1996, when 68% were opposed. This followed federal judges striking down bans on same-sex marriage in Pennsylvania and Oregon earlier in the week. Well, earlier in the month, and this is a quote from the Associated Press on May 6, a narrowly divided U.S. Supreme Court upheld decidedly Christian prayers at the start of a local council meeting. I go, that's good. Declaring them in line with the long national traditions, though the country has grown more religiously diverse. So they're going to allow these prayers. And it seems like a positive until you realize that the 5-4 decision could easily have gone the other way. And with the appointment of more liberal justices, it still could in the near future. So how close is that? You know, get rid of praying in public, basically, at these occasions. Things have drastically changed in America since the Supreme Court outlawed prayer and Bible studies in public schools in the early 1960s and declared abortion legal in 1973. Over these same decades, morality has plummeted throughout the world and in the United States. But the decline began a lot earlier, often traced to the horrible after effects of the world wars of the 20th century, where millions were slaughtered. An attempted genocide led untold numbers of people to view life as cheap and a godless scramble to get what you can while you can. This year, again, it marks the 100th anniversary of World War I. We're covering that in the published good news that we just sent out. And it was in the wake of that epic conflict that America, Canada, and Britain devolved into what we refer to as the new morality of the Roaring Twenties is when it really took hold. But it wasn't the war alone that caused people to cast off their moorings, because other factors were already at work, you know, even before that, taking their toll. Since the beginning of the 1900s, the United States and other Western nations saw the rise of progressivism, with politicians attempting to lead society gradually into utopian dreams of world socialism in which God ultimately is excluded. And this was built in large part on the introduction in the 1800s of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution and the social implications of minimizing or eliminating God's role as the creator and seeing man as just an evolved animal, a philosophy of meaninglessness, enabling liberation from Judeo-Christian morality. There's a really great quote on that that we were looking up a few weeks ago, and I'm sure Mr. Barnett can find it again, by Aldous Huxley in Ways and Means, about how we had a reason for wanting the world to not have a meaning, so we could be liberated and do what we want, particularly sexually. That was what he actually admitted. Well, today the Western world is reaping what it's sown in rampant atheism, communism, and immorality, with the celebration of gay marriage lowering us to depths not even seen in the debauched pagan societies of ancient times. The nations of the world are thumbing their noses at God, including America. Who would have thought that this country, which is founded as a shining city on a hill, would be projecting such godlessness today? That's what we are marked for. In a new 2014 book titled God Less America, and this is it, this is by Todd Starnes, Fox News Radio commentator. But you see, it's God Less, there's a B, God Bless America, but it's faded. It's very fitting though. God Less America. He's compiled many recent news stories showing the attack on traditional values and the expulsion of God from public life in the nation today. And it's very eye-opening and disheartening to read that. After mentioning that well-known evangelical pastor Rick Warren told him that he thought religious liberty would become the civil rights issue of our generation, Starnes says this. This is on page 3 of his book. Imagine the implications. Imagine what the future might look like for people of faith. Could it be that one day the pastor of the local First Baptist Church will be arrested for preaching hate? Could it be that one day police will turn hoses on little Christian boys and girls as they sing Jesus Loves Me at Vacation Bible School? Is it possible that Christian business owners could one day be forced to close down for refusing to violate the tenets of their faith? This is actually happening. Will evangelical college students be denied entry into science and psychology programs because they believe in creationism? Will chaplains be thrown out of the armed forces if they pray in the name of Jesus? Will evangelical organizations be labeled domestic hate groups for defending the traditional definition of marriage? And again, some of these things are happening. Going on, he says, the perfect storm is brewing. The White House is waging an all-out assault on religious liberty. Public schools are indoctrinating our children with the gospel of secularism. Hollywood is spewing toxins into our homes. The soundtrack of our lives is a pulsating mix of sex and violence and filth. The American family is in ruins. What was once wrong is now right, and what was once right is now wrong. End quote. The awful fact is that globally, nationally, locally, and personally, there is a war being waged against the Creator God in the public arena, and ultimately in the spirit realm and in the minds of people. Let us take warning in what is happening around us and in our own affected thoughts and beliefs. And I also want to interject something here for you as an audience of God's people. Please turn, if you would, to Ezekiel 9, over to Ezekiel 9. I have another thought and another reason for going into this. Here in Ezekiel 9, Jerusalem signifies the Jewish city of Ezekiel's day, as well as all of end-time Israel. And God calls for its destruction. We can read here in Ezekiel 9, verses 4 through 10. He's talking to these, it calls them men, but apparently this is an angelic force bringing destruction. And the Lord said to him, "Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it." To the others, he said in my hearing, "Go after him through the city and kill. Do not let your eye spare nor have any pity. Utterly slay old and young men, maidens, little children and women, but do not come near anyone on whom is the mark on those who sigh and cry over the abominations, and begin at my sanctuary." So they began with the elders who were before the temple, and he said to them, "Defile the temple, fill the courts with the slain, go out." And they went out and killed in the city, and so it was while they were killing them that I was left alone. And I fell on my face and cried out and said, "Ah, Lord God, will you destroy all the remnant of Israel, pouring out your fury on Jerusalem?" And he said to me, "The iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah." Notice this. This was about, remember, going through the midst of Jerusalem, but this is not just Jerusalem. This is all Israel and Judah. And this was written after Israel had been taken into captivity. This is an end time prophecy, and it's today, brethren. "The iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great. And the land is full of bloodshed, and the city full of perversity. For they say, 'The Lord has forsaken the land.' The Lord doesn't see. And as for me also, my eye will neither spare, nor will I have pity, but I will recompense their deeds on their own head." So this is very serious, and it applies to right now. "And I'll be giving you much today to sigh and cry over. Atrocious wrongs in the country. Total defiance of God. In essence, a war on him. And I relate these to you as things to mourn over, to pray to God about, to pour out your hearts over. And God will set a mark of protection on you for when his judgment comes. And it will come. We don't know how long it's going to be, but these things cannot continue." The next section I have here is on silencing God's children. I wonder if I could get a drink of water, if somebody could grab that. Silencing God's children. Since 1973, the Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade, there have been more than 56 million abortions in the United States. An unconscionable slaughter of innocents in a professing Christian nation. 56 million. Yet even this pales besides the ghastly figure of 40 million abortions every year worldwide. And that's estimating low, meaning that at least 1.2 billion children have been aborted since 1980. Over a billion. A billion. And America has become a supporter of the broader killing. In one of his first acts in office, U.S. President Barack Obama, this is a quote from Reuters in January 23, 2009, one of his first acts, he lifted restrictions on U.S. government funding for groups that provide abortion services or counseling abroad. So not only are we doing it here, we're supporting it elsewhere. Meaning U.S. taxpayers are forced to fund abortions and abortion promotion in other countries. On February 26, 2014, the president told his pro-abortion political group Organizing for Action that they are doing, quote, God's work. And the previous year, April 26, 2013, he spoke at a gala for Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, concluding with, "Thank you, Planned Parenthood. God bless you. God bless America." I mean, it's unbelievable. A commentary at WND, which is formerly WorldNet Daily, responds, and this was on March 4, 2014 by Jerry Newcomb. He said, "Really? May God bless the efforts of Planned Parenthood, which is in the business of destroying his creation? Which God? Certainly not the God of the Bible." As Todd Starnes here notes in his book, God Bless America, this is on page 210, we ask God to bless America, but we silence His children. God bless America, we should be on our knees asking for His mercy instead. But America is far from that. For abortion providers, the slaughter of the unborn could be very lucrative business. A former abortion provider has explained how she was on her way to becoming a millionaire by selling abortions to teenage girls. The marketing began in kindergarten and grade school sex education. The goal for fifth and sixth grade students, according to Carol Everett, this is from LifeSite News on May 12, 2014, quote, was to get them sexually active on a low-dose birth control pill that we knew they would get pregnant on. That pill did not work, and we could accomplish our goal of 3 to 5 abortions between the ages of 13 and 18. And government has now mandated abortion insurance coverage for the whole country through President Obama's healthcare legislation, although, you know, this is still being challenged. Obamacare, Starnes points out, the Obama administration, this is page 209, is trying to force religious organizations to provide insurance for birth control and abortion-inducing drugs in direct violation of their religious beliefs. The Internal Revenue Service launched investigations into pro-life organizations, demanding to know the contents of their prayers. They ordered a Wyoming church to turn over its membership rolls. This is happening right here, right now, in the United States of America. We are under attack from within. End quote. Indeed, another pro-life group was told by the IRS that, quote, it's on page 8, they could not picket or protest abortion clinics. An attorney representing the pro-life groups called the IRS actions intimidating and heavy-handed. One IRS agent went so far as to tell a pro-life group that it had to remain neutral on the issue of abortion and lectured the group's president about forcing its religious beliefs on others. Quote, you have to know your boundaries, IRS agent Sherry Wan could be heard saying in a recording. Quote, you have to know your limits. You have to respect other people's beliefs. This is to a pro-life group. It's staggering. Remember that this refers to beliefs about what is in fact murdering unborn children. The media has been complicit in this. It has in most case aspects, you know, most aspects of the liberal progressive media in their agenda has. Commenting on the failure of the news media report last year on the trial of Pennsylvania abortion doctor Kermit Gosnell, which is a horrible story, by the way, over late-term abortions and infanticide, where they had actually birthed a child and then actually killed the child. Ostensibly, you know, they were not reporting ostensibly because it would draw negative attention to abortion. That's why the media didn't want to touch it. Liberal political analyst Kirsten Powers wrote in USA Today. Here's what she said. And kudos to what she said. This is from April 11th, 2013. And I apologize for what this says, but I hope you can get by this. Infant beheadings, severed baby feet in jars, a child screaming after it was delivered alive during an abortion procedure. Haven't heard about these sickening accusations? It's not your fault. There's been precious little coverage in the case that should be on every news show and front page. A LexisNexis search shows none of the news shows on the three major national television networks has mentioned the Gosnell trial in the last 3 months, as of the time this was written last year. The deafening silence of too much of the media, once a force for justice in America, is a disgrace. It is. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Meanwhile, the indoctrination of the younger generation continues. Officials at a high school in Tacoma, Washington decided, quote, to allow posters and events for a gay-straight alliance while refusing to allow similar posters and events related to the local Students for Life. The pro-life group wanted to put up two posters. The first reads, since Roe v. Wade, one-third of our generation has been aborted. That's amazing. The second poster quotes President Ronald Reagan, I've noticed that everyone who is for abortion is already born. But school officials said the posters might offend. But, you know, they were going to let, of course, they allowed the pro-gay messages. And that was from WND on February 19th of 2014. Where is the outrage over the untold mass murder going on? I see that it's by my, I'm going to look at something really quick here. I guess that's, 7 plus 15. 7 plus. Sorry about this. equals, I have a calculator for those who can't see me, times. So in the time that I've been up here, I guess that'd be about 7 plus 15, looking at about 22 minutes. We're getting close to 2,000 abortions have been performed around the world since I've been up here speaking. It's just disturbing when you think about it like that. Absolutely mind-boggling. Turn over to Numbers 35, if you would. Numbers 35. You know, this is a blight not just on America, it's the entire human race. What an awful thing is going on here. Numbers 35 and verse 33. God says, "So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land." And this is a lot of innocent bloodshed. "And no atonement can be made for the land, for the blood that's shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it." And we wonder, why is all this destruction coming? Why are these terrible things happening, going to happen? "Except by the blood of him who shed it." And that includes those who bear responsibility in it. It's not just those who are doing it. It's those who are allowing it and have caused it to happen and perpetuate it. Next, I want to go to the subject of growing hostility toward Christian faith and morality. Growing hostility toward Christian faith and morality. According to a 2012 survey by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, religious affiliation in America has dramatically dropped, especially among the young. In 1972, 7% of U.S. adults had no religious affiliation. But as of 2012, the figure is 1/5 of the U.S. population, of the adult population. And 32% for adults under age 30 have no religious affiliation. I mean, what a difference this time has made. That's from the Pew Forum, August 9th, 2012. And according to U.S. Census figures, between 1990 and 2008, the number of Americans with no religion more than doubled. The Pew survey further showed that 73% of these people with no religious affiliation support gay marriage, and 72% of them support legalized abortion. So basically, you know, we're looking at 3/4 of these people that are in that category are in favor of these horrific things. These changes are part and parcel with increased demands for overturning traditional morality. Former Arkansas governor and U.S. presidential candidate Mike Huckabee wrote in the foreword of Starnes' book, and this is on page small room in numeral 11. "In recent years, militant special interest groups have made it their goal to co-opt our religious liberties and force industry and government to go beyond tolerance of their views and demand full approval of them. Anyone who believes otherwise is told to shut up. We've become a society that obsesses over tolerance and acceptance of everyone except for God." Indeed, a joint report by two religious freedom groups, the Family Research Council and Liberty Institute, has documented, and this is what Starnes says on page 208, has documented more than 600 recent examples of religious hostility. 600 American stories, our stories. WND noted some of these and others in an article titled "Persecution of Christians on the Rise in U.S., September 17, 2012. Here are some from the joint report, as listed in that WND story. A federal judge threatened incarceration to a high school valedictorian unless she removed references to Jesus from her graduation speech. City officials prohibited senior citizens from praying over their meals, listening to religious messages, or singing gospel songs at a senior activities center. A public school officially lifted an elementary school student from his seat and reprimanded him in front of his classmates for praying over his lunch. Following U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs policies, a federal government official sought to censor a pastor's prayer, eliminating references to Jesus during a Memorial Day celebration honoring veterans at a national cemetery. Can't talk about Jesus at the national cemetery. The U.S. Department of Justice argued before the Supreme Court that the federal government can tell churches and synagogues which pastors and rabbis it can hire and fire.
Oh.
Through the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, the federal government is forcing religious organizations to provide insurance for birth control, abortion-inducing drugs, in direct violation of religious beliefs. Although, thankfully, I mean, there was that Hobby Lobby case, and we'll see how that continues. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs banned the mention of God from veterans' funerals, overriding the wishes of the deceased's families. A federal judge held that prayers before a state House of Representatives could be to Allah, but not to Jesus. In the same article, Christian rights organization ACLJ, senior counsel David French is quoted as saying, "One of the most strident examples, the misuse of the Establishment Clause, that is of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, to attempt to ban any mention of God from historical markers, monuments, or even museum exhibits. This represents an effort to whitewash God from American history and change our national identity." That is what's happening. Phyllis Schlafly, founder of Eagle Forum, wrote a piece titled "One Nation Under Government, Not Under God," stating that, quote, this is July 11, 2012, "Barack Obama has a record of hostility to religion that we have never before seen in any American president." Among other examples, she references his speaking at Georgetown University in April 2009 with the requirement that the IHS monogram, which stands for the name of Jesus in Greek, above the podium be concealed. His repeatedly skipping over the references to the Creator and quoting the Declaration of Independence. He quotes the Declaration, but he skips over where it mentions the Creator, and it's absolutely incredible. And is wrongly quoting the national motto as E Pluribus Unum, out of many one, rather than In God We Trust. It is intentional, brethren. It is not unintentional. You can go through here. In April 2009, Obama put forward three nominees for U.S. Ambassador to the Vatican, who were all pro-abortion, and they were all rejected. In February 2011, he directed the Department of Justice to stop defending the Defense of Marriage Act, in which same-sex marriage was not recognized by the federal government at the time. And in July 2011, he allowed homosexuals to serve openly in the military, ending the don't ask, don't tell policy. And it was under the Obama administration that, quote, a widow who lives in a Minnesota apartment complex funded by the Department of Housing and Urban Development was told she could not pray, read her Bible, or have private discussions of religious nature in the commons area of the complex. That's from Starnes on page 10. And from Schlafly, in September 2011, the U.S. Army revised guidelines for Walter Reed Hospital to read, "No religious items, i.e. Bibles, reading materials, are allowed to be given away or used during a visit." The hospital rescinded this policy only after Congressman Steve King reported it to the House of Representatives. They push and push and get what they want to get. Furthermore, this is from Starnes on page 152, two Baptist chaplains said they were forced out of a Veterans Affairs chaplain training program after they refused orders to stop quoting the Bible and stop praying in the name of Jesus. Yeah, the chaplains had to stop quoting the Bible and stop using Jesus' name, or they couldn't be in the chaplain program. Yeah, while government leaders attempt to push God and the Bible out, they welcome and finance alternative religion. The Air Force Academy in 2011, this is a quote from the Los Angeles Times, November 26, 2011. The Air Force Academy dedicated an $80,000 outdoor worship center, a small Stonehenge-like circle of boulders with propane fire pit, high on a hill for the handful of current or future cadets whose religions fall under the broad category of earth-based. Those include pagans, Wiccans, Druids, witches, and followers of Native American faiths. So you can't have God, but we'll build you a Stonehenge for all the Wiccans and pagans and whatnot. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. And the anti-Christian trend is not just in America. A dispute over whether government can require Catholic schools to teach Wiccan and pagan rites as equal to the Ten Commandments and the resurrection of Jesus is headed to Canada's highest court. That was on March 11, 2014, as reported by WND. Moreover, preferential treatment is given to Islam in numerous ways. And this next part is, we could break away on a sidebar here, one nation under Allah. It's just an ominous wording. You see a title like that, but there's a reason that this does have that title. Actor and commentator Chuck Norris presented a stark contrast in a column a few years back. This was in 2010 at townhall.com. He wrote, "Speaking for most founding fathers in his day, John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, appointed by George Washington himself, said, 'Providence has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty, as well as the privilege and interest of a Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers.'" That's what the first Supreme Court justice said. 200 years later, President Barack Obama has denied America's rich Judeo-Christian heritage before the eyes and ears of other countries, as he publicly declared in Turkey on April 6, 2009, "We do not consider ourselves a Christian nation." In May 2009, President Obama, quote, this is from Phyllis Schlafly, President Obama, quote, canceled the traditional White House event honoring the National Day of Prayer, saying that he would only pray in private. Yet he hosts Muslim iftar dinners at the White House during Ramadan. The Obama administration has sought to strike terminology deemed offensive to Muslims from government speeches and documents like Islamic extremism, Islamic radicalism, jihadists, terrorists, and the like. It's like they like to pretend these words don't exist. I have seen them throw them in a few times, but it's usually when they have some goal, when they're trying to get something through. The president even stated in Cairo in June 2009, as quoted in Christianity Today, April 13, 2008, quote, "I consider it part of my responsibility as president of the United States to fight against negative stereotypes of Islam wherever, whenever they appear." That's his job as our president, by the way, is to fight against the negative stereotypes of Islam whenever they appear. It just amazed me. Christians do not receive the same sensitivity, by the way. Obama had earlier demeaned many among them, among the Christians, as those who, quote, cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them. I'm sorry, the previous quote that I gave you about was from Norris, and that was what I just gave you was from Christianity Today. While often avoiding official mentions or acknowledgments of traditional Christian observances, the president, and this is a quote from the American Family Association in 2011, the president, quote, has really, so he gets rid of what, you know, and we might think, okay, so he gets rid of Christmas and Easter and all these other traditional Christian holiday proclamations. But here's the problem. But he's released statements in honor of Ramadan, Eid al-Fitr, Hajj, and Eid al-Adha, holidays which most Americans cannot pronounce and certainly did not celebrate. The efforts of the president and others who are marginalizing Christianity while effectively promoting Islam are having an effect. Godless America, Starnes points out that, quote, "While the government cracks down on public expressions of the Christian faith, they are embracing public expressions of the Islamic faith, many times at taxpayer expense. For instance, universities across the nation are spending thousands of dollars to install foot baths so Muslim students can wash their feet before their five times a day prayers." So they'll do that. But, you know, nothing for Christianity. That was on page 26. Starnes further points out how the rise of Islam in America has been described as a bloodless revolution, a stealth jihad that is being waged in the nation's public school classrooms. That's page 161. And this is from page 165, or 164 through 166. An advanced placement world geography teacher at a Texas high school who encouraged students to dress in Islamic clothing also instructed them to refer to the 9/11 hijackers not as terrorists but as freedom fighters, according to students who were in the class. And school children in Indiana were required to sing a song declaring Allah is God during what was supposed to be an inclusive holiday concert. Representative Andre Carson, a congressman from Indiana, advocated for this one really floored me. This is representative in the government. Andre Carson, congressman from Indiana, advocated for modeling the nation's public school system after Islamic schools, stating, quote, "America will never tap into educational innovation and ingenuity without looking at the model that we have in our madrasas, in our schools, where innovation is encouraged, where the foundation is the Quran." The mainstream media ignored the congressman's declaration. William Saxton, chairman of Citizens for National Security, has studied the promotion of Islam in public school textbooks. Saxton's all-volunteer organization launched a nationwide study in 2009 to root out what they believe to be Islamic bias in American school textbooks. He said they found as many as 80 textbooks that overly promoted Islam, you know, going to all our young people. Of course, this is a serious concern throughout the world. The Daily Mail reported that research indicates that Britain may no longer be a Christian country in just 20 years. If trends continue, the number of non-believers is set to overtake the number of Christians by 2030. And guess what religion is rapidly gaining ground? Muslims. The Daily Mail reports the number of Muslims has surged by 37%. Sadly, the United States is helping to fund the war on Christianity by Muslims abroad in the aid given to other countries. This is U.S. Senator Rand Paul remarked in 2013. This was quoted as CBN News blog June 13th. Rand Paul said, "It angers me to see my tax dollars supporting regimes that put Christians to death for blasphemy against Islam, countries that put to death Muslims who convert to Christianity, and countries who imprison anyone who marries outside their religion. There is a war on Christianity, not just from liberal elites here at home, but worldwide. And your government, or more correctly, you, the taxpayer, are funding it. You are being taxed to send money to countries that are not only intolerant of Christians, but openly hostile. Christians are imprisoned and threatened with death for their beliefs. And we are paying for it." It is absolutely amazing. One sad irony in all this is that the liberal elites who accuse Christians of intolerance and champion the rise of Islam as a counterweight would in the end discover the Islamists to be far more intolerant of them, putting them to death unless they swear allegiance to Islam or come under the jizya, the tax. Returning to the point about hostility against Christians, against Christian faith and morality, it is beyond disturbing how many great numbers of Americans still embracing traditional values, and that we are, but I think we talked about this here several weeks ago, how those who embrace the traditional values still have vast numbers in America. But yet, we have been not merely marginalized, but relegated to a lunatic fringe by liberal activists, by the mainstream media, and now by the U.S. military. For an example of the latter, Starnes gives this on pages 140 to 141. He says, "A group of army officers was advised to monitor soldiers who belonged to what were considered to be anti-gay, anti-Muslim, and anti-immigration organizations, according to a military email. The email was sent by a lieutenant colonel at Fort Campbell in Kentucky to 36 subordinates, warning them to be on the lookout for any soldiers who might be members of, quote, domestic hate groups. Among the groups the Army listed are well-respected organizations such as the Family Research Council, American Family Association, Atlas Shrugs, and the Federation for American Immigration Reform. The Army listed the groups alongside actual extremists and hate groups such as the neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and other supremacist groups." In 2013, Pentagon officials met with Mikey Weinstein, president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and others of his organization to discuss a policy introduced in 2012 called Air Force Culture, Air Force Standards, which requires, quote, government neutrality regarding religion. That's the policy they came up with. The Family Research Council's president, Tony Perkins, asked, why would military leadership be meeting with one of the most rabid atheists in America to discuss religious freedom in the military? Why are they doing that? Weinstein said that U.S. troops, this is what the guy that they're meeting with, here's what he said. He said that U.S. troops who proselytize, quote, are guilty of sedition and treason and should be punished. We would love to see hundreds of prosecutions to stop this outrage of fundamentalist religious persecution. He compared the act of proselytizing to rape. Quote, it is a version of being spiritually raped, and you're being spiritually raped by fundamentalist Christian predators, he told Fox News. Can you believe that? I mean, this is where we are. So if you're going to spread the gospel, it's like you see what I'm saying? That's where we are. Weinstein claims thousands of Protestants among his he says there are thousands of Protestants among his organization's ranks, says they're only going after fundamentalists of all faiths, stating, this is a quote from Starnes, that Starnes quotes him as saying on pages 151 to 152, as soon as we find a fundamentalist Muslim, atheist, Jewish person, or anybody else, we'll be happy to fight them, but so far, they've been few and far between. So Protestant Christian churches are chock full of fundamentalists, while Muslim fundamentalists are few and far between. So it's clearly dishonest. That's not what this is about at all. Air Force Senior Master Sergeant Philip Monk was fired when he could not agree that those who object to gay marriage are guilty of discrimination. That if you just object to it mentally, you should be kicked out for discrimination. Monk said that while homosexuals are coming out of the closet, Christians have to go into the closet. We are being robbed of our dignity and respect. We can't be who we are, quoted by Starnes on page 157. More and more, God is being shunted aside and banned in the public arena, particularly from schools. November 2012, a six-year-old girl was told by her North Carolina school that during a Veterans Day program, she could not say the word God. In reading a poem that honored her two grandfathers, he prayed to God for peace. He prayed to God for strength, the poem said, but she had to get rid of God. School officials in southern Florida banned a fifth grader from reading the Bible during free reading time. That's from Breitbart, May 5th. And officials at other schools are on the alert to make sure that the Gideon's International does not succeed in passing out free Bibles to students at school. Horror of horrors. An email memo from the assistant principal of a New Jersey middle school stated, it has been brought to the administration's attention that Gideon's may be near our campus to distribute literature to our students. Please make sure they do not step foot onto our campus at any time. There will be added police and security presence at dismissal. Because, you know, that's the big danger in America's public schools today, is that somebody might pass out Bibles to them. Starnes quoted a Gideon member stating, in most countries overseas, we're allowed to go into public schools and give Bibles to students, but since this is America, you can't do it here. In 2012, National Democratic Party leaders removed references to God from their party's platform, but that wasn't popular with everyone, and a move was made to put God back in, at which point many on the floor of the convention shockingly booed. Booed God. Or at least the prospect of God having anything to do with decisions in governing the nation. This country has fallen so far from the days of the founding fathers. It is such a sad commentary. In a bizarre speech at Christmas in 2013, President Obama said the holiday, he was talking about Christmas. Now, again, we understand that we don't do Christmas, but just think about this in the context of traditional America. President Obama said the holiday was about the birth of a child, but never named the child, stating, it's a message both timeless and universal, no matter what God you pray to, or if you pray to none at all. Now, while we here again recognize that Christmas is rooted in ancient paganism and is not genuinely Christian, we should nevertheless be deeply disturbed at the use of an occasion that most of the country deems Christian to marginalize Christianity and promote non-biblical religion and atheism. That's what's really going on here. Obama himself has been looked to by many on the left as a messianic, almost divine figure. Yet that's beginning to wear thin as he's not been able to fulfill all the socialist utopian dreams promises he's given. But one thing he has made significant progress in is the continued expulsion of God and biblical morality from American public life. Now, some might accuse that of being a political statement, but brethren, it is not. It is directly biblical. It has to do with recognizing that the leadership of this nation is at enmity with God. This was recognized by the prophets of the Bible as they were called out. The kings of Israel were called out for their immorality and crimes against God by the prophets. And we have a responsibility to point these things out. God says, you know, in Isaiah 58, lift up your voice like a trumpet and show my people their transgressions. And that includes the leadership of the nation. That is an important responsibility. Moving into the issue of the promotion of homosexuality. It seems, this is just a personal observation of mine, it seems strange when the gay wedding ceremony of the weather anchor on ABC's Good Morning America and his partner were covered by the news program with smiles and well wishes from the co-hosts. A little later, the Today Show covered the story of one of its weekend anchors having a baby with her lesbian partner with similar fawning. Close in time to these events was Good Morning America's George Stephanopoulos sitting down in April 2013 for an interview with the first openly gay athlete in a major U.S. professional team sport, basketball player Jason Collins, and declaring, this is what, you know, George Stephanopoulos declared, what a privilege it was to interview him. Such a privilege to interview him. You just can't escape this stuff now because it's everywhere. And regarding a more recent incident, WND Editor-in-Chief Joseph Farah writes, quote, for a moment, this is from May 18, 2014, from Joseph Farah, for a moment, forget same-sex marriage. Forget the fact that so many television shows and movies feature sympathetic gay characters. Forget that homophobic is the new racist slur. Think about the headlines that a sports figure gets simply by coming out of the gay closet. Today, when a gay NFL draftee kisses his same-sex partner on TV, he's congratulated by the President of the United States. That is what happened last week when Michael Sam became the first openly gay player drafted to the NFL. When other athletes pointed out the gratuitousness and impropriety of the moment, they were vilified, not just by gay activists, but by the sports media. Retired player Derek Ward, who said it was not good because children were watching, and he tweeted that, I think, he received death threats against him and his children. And Miami Dolphins player Don Jones, who tweeted horrible after the incident, quote, has been excused from all team activities. He also has to undergo training related to his comments. And that was May 18, 2014. He was further forced to apologize. Remember, Farah asks, when the rhetoric of the gay rights movement was, what I do in the privacy of my own bedroom is nobody else's business. Well, today, the gay revolution has done a 180 and now believes what people do in the privacy of their own bedroom is everyone's business. It must be considered a heroic act when a homosexual tells the world what he or she is. Dissenters are punished. It was always cool to be an athlete, but now it's especially cool to be a gay athlete. Farah then presents a number of examples. In reply to the idea that tolerance should run both ways, that people should tolerate homosexuality, but that homosexuals should tolerate the sensitivities of those who disapprove, MSNBC contributor Jonathan Capehart argued that, quote, tolerance, no, is not, it should not be a two-way street. It's a one-way street. You cannot say to someone that that who you are is wrong, an abomination, is horrible, get a room, and all those other things that people said about Michael Sam, and not be forced, well, not forced, but not be made to understand that what you're saying and what you're doing is wrong. That was on Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell on May 12th. A Newsbusters article responded, that's the perfect encapsulation of liberalism. They will make you to understand that you are wrong and they are right. You will tolerate whoever they like, but as for you, tough luck. If you don't share their tolerant beliefs, they will not tolerate you. Tolerance, in its true classical definition, is intolerable. Real tolerance, according to Capehart, looks more like a posture of unquestioning acceptance and a self-imposed gag rule whereby social conservatives dare not say anything remotely critical of homosexuality. It's from Paul Bremer on May 13, 2014. We see more and more with the proliferation of hate speech laws around the world, through which evangelical pastors have been jailed in some countries for quoting the Bible and labeling homosexuality a sin. Tom Starnes comments in his book that those in the militant right, gay rights community not only expect you to accept their lifestyle, but they also want you to affirm it. They want your children exposed to it in their public school classrooms. They want private business owners to endorse their court-sanctioned marriages, in quotes. They and will be to any person who dares object. It's page 64. Back in 2007, a federal judge in Massachusetts actually ruled that the gay agenda be taught to Christian kids in public schools, quote, ordering that it is reasonable, indeed there is an obligation for public schools to teach young children to accept and endorse homosexuality. End quote. That's our schools today. That's from WND February 24, 2007. Again, it's not only in America. LifeSite News reports on Scotland. Quote, while Scottish government draft guidelines currently allow teachers with moral objections to opt out of certain aspects of the country's new sex ed curriculum, such as teaching about gay marriage, several National Health Service boards have objected to the opt-out clause. They're also objecting to provisions allowing parents to opt their children out of the classes. Another NHS board warned against allowing parents too much influence over their children, saying that the decision about whether to attend the classes should be left up to the students, even if their parents object. And again, that's from LifeSite News on May 15th. It's truly disturbing to read a recent report from the pro-family organization Mass Resistance titled GLBT Teachers Conference in Boston Reveals Latest Plans to Push Homosexuality Even Further into Schools. Well-organized, filled with taxpayer dollars. The report states GLSEN, or GLSEN, Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, is the nation's largest homosexuality and transgender activist organization working inside schools in all 50 states. They're inside the schools in all 50 states. It has set up Gay Straight Alliance student clubs, GSAs, inside thousands of high schools and even some middle schools across the country. GLSEN pushes a wide range of psychologically penetrating homosexuality and transgender program activities into the schools. It also directly organizes and trains teachers to integrate their techniques through the curriculum. In 2000, the Boston Area GLSEN Conference gained national outrage when Mass Resistance, then known as the Parents' Rights Coalition, exposed the sickening workshops which involved adults teaching young kids explicit sex acts. Students as young as 12 were given graphic instruction in extreme perverse acts by state employees. Nevertheless, the Massachusetts legislature and corporate America has continued to support GLSEN. Here are a couple of the 2014 conference workshops. Here are a couple of the workshops for training teachers, administrators, and activist students. 3.1, starting a middle school, GSA. Practical advice and encouragement for students, staff, parents, and community members who would like to establish a sustainable GSA in their local middle school. 3.2, queering the classroom, providing a safe environment for GLBTQ youth. There's a Q now because you have to, it's questioning at the end, by the way. Q is, or youth promotes a more comfortable, creative environment for all students. Resource and discussion will address your classroom needs. It's perhaps most disturbing, and I was very disturbed by this, to see a picture of a sign behind the conference speakers that proudly proclaims GLSEN, making a difference in K through 12 schools. They are making a difference. Along with all the other forces pushing young people to accept and embrace this lifestyle is evidence of a major cultural shift. One family advocate pointed to a recent poll by the Pew Research Center indicating a full 70% of millennials, that is those born in 1981 or later, support same-sex marriage. By contrast, 49% of those in Generation X, born between 1960 and 1980, 38% of baby boomers, 21% from the silent generation, that's earlier, support homosexual marriage. So you can see that over time this is having an effect. As you get younger and younger, they become more and more accepting of these things. And I do have more to go on this, but I will get to some Bible verses now that I want to talk about and come back to this later. I'd like you to turn over to Isaiah 3. Because, you know, I just scratched the surface here. There's just so much that's going on on this topic and on so much of what's happening. And by the way, I want to come back to this subject because I think it's important that we are aware of what's going on in the country. But, and we will see more about this homosexual agenda as we proceed on this. But also, it's not just homosexuality, it's immorality of every kind. It's just become extremely rampant. And acceptable. Things that would have been unacceptable. Very recently, they would have been unacceptable. Now they're tolerated and then they're acceptable. That's where we're going. Well, if you look at Isaiah 3, you know, here's what God says in verses 8 through 9. And again, he was talking about ancient Judah, but it applies very well to our time today. This is verses 8 and 9. For Jerusalem stumbled and Judah is fallen because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord. There is a war against God, and they are against God. To provoke the eyes of His glory, the look on their countenance witnesses against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They declare it as Sodom. And say they're just out of the closet, right? It's not hidden away. It's in your face. So that not only in your face, it's that you better support it too, or bad things will happen to you. They declare their sin as Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to their soul, for they have brought evil on themselves, the calamity that's coming, and all the destructiveness in their personal lives and everything that is going on in the world around us. And turn over also to Jeremiah 6. Jeremiah 6, as repeated in chapter 8 and verse 12. You see it in Jeremiah 8, 12 as well, this statement. Jeremiah 6, 15. Were they ashamed when they had committed abominations? God asked. Were they ashamed when they had committed abominations? No, they were not at all ashamed. Nor did they know how to blush. They just thought this was right. It wasn't that they were embarrassed about it. They believe they're right. Therefore they shall fall among those who fall. At the time I punish them, they shall be cast down, says the Lord. And brethren, that is the state of America today and much of the world. I mean, and most of the world. All the world. What a tragic time we live in as we are getting worse and worse and coming to that very end. So I think today that I will leave it at this point, because later I do want to get more into the agenda of what's happening. I do want to cover this some more. And also I want to bring it down to our own personal lives and examining how we ourselves have been affected by this world around us and the fact that we have actually ourselves participated in the war against God and how we can extract ourselves completely from that. But these are things to be watching for, brethren. These are things to be pouring out our hearts before God, to be sighing and crying over. And if you do, God will put a mark on you to protect you on this time, as He said, at the time I punish them, when the nations and all those around will be cast down.